Good afternoon, everybody. So one of the things that I was asked to do today was to speak on this notion of this report from the health equity lens, which is a part of the report. I think it's chapter 4 or chapter 5 talks about the health equity lens. So I'm not going to make any assumptions that I am going to go back over the language of health equity, since it was a major part of our consideration in doing this report, a recognition that speaking only about childhood obesity without addressing the issue of equity was probably a mistake, if not just short-sighted. So there are two definitions that I put in here. I think this one is actually in the report. This is the CDC's definition from 2007. What's been interesting about the evolution of health equity as a concept is now everybody's kind of talking about it. HHS is talking about it. They're changing offices. Names are going from Minority Health to Minority Health and Health Equity. An actual definition of health equity from CDC came out in 2007, which talks about the fair distribution of health determinants, outcomes, and resources within and between segments of populations. And I don't know, Shariki, what did you do? Because now it's not able. Use the keyboard? Okay, fine. Forget the mouse. I hate mice anyway. This is a bigger definition. As you can see, it's a lot more language, but it's very in alignment with WHO and the concept of all people and optimizing the health of all people. And it says it's the realization by all people of the highest attainable level of health, a phrase that is seen throughout WHO doctrines and definitions and meetings. That requires valuing all individuals and populations equally, and entails focus and ongoing, the two key terms here, societal efforts to address avoidable, and that's a major part of the definition of inequity, it's that they're avoidable, they're not natural, by assuring conditions for optimal health. The IRM report a few years ago on public health said that public health function is assuring the conditions in which all people can be healthy. So it fits into this as well, particularly for those who've experienced historical or contemporary injustices or socioeconomic disadvantage. So these are the two definitions of health equity I'd like you to place in your armamentarium. This is directly from the report that the chapter was entitled Creating Equal Opportunity for Healthy Weight. And this is what the intent was, increasing awareness of the role of social and economic and environmental factors in determining health of individuals, something we're talking a lot about during this conference. And I hope you all had an opportunity to be at the opening session the other night, which was absolutely phenomenal. The issue of food security, a issue that has been that we've been made aware of in this country. We used to think about food security only as it relates to the developing world, and then we recognize we got issues right here in the United States. The issue of food deserts closely aligned to that, or an inadequate food system, not just where are the stores and is the produce available, what is the actual entire food system as it relates to its ability to support the needs of all populations equally. An absence of what we call opportunity neighborhoods, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. And a notion that the response to this problem must be holistic, not just specifically addressed upon individual behavior. This is a slide that identifies opportunity neighborhoods. It's a kind of new area of work that a researcher named, I think her name is Avedo Garcia, has done a lot of work on this. And if you look at this, well, gee, that's the neighborhood I want. You know, it has sustainable employment, high-performing schools, access to high-quality health care, adequate transportation, high-quality child care, neighborhood safety, and institutions that facilitate civic engagement. So if you look at the flip side of this, the neighborhoods that are suffering because of lack of access and inequities don't have this. This is what we all want. This is what they don't have. And in any discussion about childhood obesity or any particular health problem, we have to find a way to address the neighborhood. Because what is it we say? Place matters. You all recognize that by now, I'm sure. Another notion of the work is that all policy is health policy. It's not quite stated in this fashion, but the notion that housing policy, education policy, transportation policy, a job policy, employment policy, they all impact on the health of populations. So if we're going to address this issue of childhood obesity, we have to do it through this lens as well. It's more than just the narrow focus on individual actions. Again, from the report, a lot of what's in here in terms of local government actions, as a health department director, I'm going to talk to you about some of the things that we've done that are right out of the report that support the notions of the conclusions from this report. Coordination amongst agencies and organizations, that's obvious, but we don't do enough of it. There was a town hall meeting this morning with the feds discussing the new council. The prevention council is supposed to have, I think, something like 17 cabinet level individuals from labor and transportation and housing and whatnot, all of whom are supposed to work together under the Surgeon General to bring about this new notion of prevention in the United States, which would be great to see, particularly if they include health equity and social justice in that conversation. Engaging with communities in planning and implementing actions to improve health and health equity. Obviously, all the conversation about community-based participatory research, partnerships, collaborations has to be a part of a successful end to this issue addressing. Find ways to increase the availability of healthy, affordable foods. That was a part of the report, and I'm going to show you two examples of that from Metro Louisville where we've actually done that. The built environment issue that we talk about a lot, but of course it's critically important when it comes to access to places to be physically active. The way neighborhoods are constructed, urban blight. We've recently begun talking about taking a charge of all of the vacant lots in Metro Louisville and turning them into community gardens, irregardless of who they belong to, because they're there, they're fat, there's nothing being done with them. They're, you know, distant landlord owners, and well, fine, you want to be that way, to hell with you. We're going to take these gardens, we're going to turn these vacant lots into gardens. And we know that urban blight is a part of the pathology that develops around individuals in their communities when they have to continue to look at this. Cultural barriers are extremely important, obviously, working with partners to identify and build upon cultural assets, things that communities do ordinarily, but to turn them into positive opportunities for physical activity and improved health. Community empowerment, capacity building, advocacy, and engagement in the policy process, that is a part of the solution. What you see here, West End Visioning Process is an example. I won't go into great detail, but we engaged our local community in the West End, which is where the majority of African Americans and poor blacks as well as poor whites reside, engaged them in a visioning process to encourage them to have some broad, positive, optimistic thoughts about the way they'd like to see their communities look and how they're going to get there. So there was an opportunity for them to be empowered about creating the future in their own vision. CPPW, as I mentioned, the grant that we got from CDC, we in fact used 23 strategies. Some of them are school strategies. This is outside of the confines of the report. But some of them are school strategies, like hiring dietitians to analyze the menus in all public schools for sugar and salt content, and then to work to bring those down so children can passively enjoy a healthier diet, and many others. But menu analysis, I just got word today in my email that the Food Policy Council ordinance that we put forth has been signed as an executive order by the mayor today. That's in the document that as a recommendation. Healthy in a Hurry corner stores, I'll show you those in a minute. I signed into existence breastfeeding policy for the health department as a city agency, and a buy local policy as a city agency, which are going to dramatically impact our community's ability to eat healthier foods. Part of our grant was to increase community policing. So the money from the health department grant went to the police department to increase bicycle routes in certain communities to improve the level of safety, feeling that will help kids get out and be physically active. But there's behavior change too, and I'm not going to go into these in detail, but if you want to know about Mayor's Healthy Hometown Movement or Tommy Smith Youth Initiative, which are more individually based in the things that we're also doing as a department. I want to briefly talk about the Center for Health Equity, which drives a lot of the work that we do around this work. It is a physical location in the West End, in that community, so people can see that we're trying to pay attention to their needs. This is our mission statement. Notice that it's talking about a civic process that builds social engagement, strengthens communities, and influences public policy. That's a health department operation. So we're talking about things that normally people might say, this is not really health department work. But in the context of health equity, we believe that it is. My favorite, most beautiful slide that I love all the time to use this slide because it talks about social determinants. You have probably seen this slide. If not, you know the concept of upstream, downstream. If not, imagine two people standing on the bank of the river fishing. And the first time I told this story, I said they were fishing and drinking brandy, and everybody laughed at me. But I guess you don't drink brandy when you fish. Being from the South Bronx, I don't know anything about fishing. I'm sorry. So I changed it. I said, now they're sitting on the bank of the river and they're drinking beer. and while they're fishing, a baby floats down the river. And then and they're shocked and aghast before they can do anything. A second and a third baby floats down the river. And the first person throws his fishing rod down and dives in the river to save the babies. The second person throws his fishing rod down, but he turns and he starts running upstream. And the first guy calls to the second guy and says, yo, where are you going? I need you to help me pull the babies out of the river. He says, I'm going upstream to find out who's throwing them in and stop them. That's the upstream downstream analysis. It's a nice way to present this discussion to anybody because people can understand that. So what's happening is that because we're not upstream, we could pull babies out of the river all day long and all night for the next 100 years. And we would never close the gap in excess death because we haven't gone upstream to recognize that the social determinants are driving the babies in the river in the first place. And that's where the emphasis needs to be. And it's a long, exhaustive list, but this is the list. On this side, the socioeconomic status, that's the classical definition of socioeconomic status, occupation, education, and income. All impact on health outcomes, particularly income gaps. I've added racism, housing, and political power. And on the other side, that's a publication from WHO called The Solid Facts. This is their list of social determinants, which they feel if we could just find a way to address these, we'd move dramatically close to eliminating the gap in excess death. So that's a part of the analysis that we look at. So this health equity and public health practice slide talks about a health equity orientation concerned with societal reasons for the persistence of these inequities, and it's a distinct ethical and decision-making perspective that we have to be about to do this work. I put this one on to show you the kind of the difference in the two approaches. The conventional would be what social programs and services needed to address poor health outcomes. The health equity approach says what types of institutional and social changes are necessary to prevent poor health outcomes. So it's a whole shift, a different way of thinking about the health of populations. And I'll pass that one by. Now, I have a few GIS maps I wanted to show you of Metro Louisville to kind of pinpoint this issue. You all know GIS maps. You know the darker the color, the higher the incidence or whatever it is you're measuring. In this context, we did a composite slide here of risk of childhood obesity, which includes lots of things, including distance to fresh, affordable groceries and transportation patterns, et cetera. And the area that you see that's the darkest red, that is the West End. That's where the Center for Health Equity exists. That's where the overwhelming majority of the African-American community exists. That's where most poor people live in our community. And consequently, based upon the analysis, that is the highest risk of childhood obesity in that particular community. This is the percentage of African Americans, and it is in fact the same with the addition of another community called Newburgh. But this one is high school education. The higher dropout rates are demonstrated on this matter. The percentage of no high school diploma and GED, the red color means that's the highest percentage of no high school diploma GED. And of course, you recognize it's essentially the same map with addition of the Southwest. There's a clear division between the East and the West. In terms of this slide. And I'll tell you that the East is overwhelmingly white, middle to upper middle class. The West is overwhelmingly African-American, poor white, and then immigrants moving down into the southern part of the county. This is an interesting slide that we put together. This is called convenience and fast food retail location density. The chartreuse color, I think that's what you should call it, the kind of purplish color, that's the highest density of retail fast food locations. And you can see it's the same general distribution. That strip over there, I don't have a point I can't show you, is called Broadway. It has the highest concentration of fast food restaurants of any area in the entire state of Kentucky. And it's right in the middle of the West End. No surprise, since that's the same area we said has the highest rate of the risk of childhood obesity. So we've done our work around identifying food deserts, and this is part of what we saw. On this side of the slide, we've done the research, and the shelf life of that material is 150,000 years. And clearly what we're trying to move to is what's on the other side of the slide, which is fresh produce. Those are stock photographs. This is a real photograph. That's our mayor to show you how important leadership is in this process. And this store used to be, it's called the Dollar Store. They would sell, you know, cigarettes, beer, all kind of junk, that 150,000 year stuff, but never sold fruits and vegetables. As a result of a unique collaboration with the YMCA of all people, we supported the purchase of refrigeration units and shelving material and hooked this guy, this lady up, it's a woman who owns the store, with a wholesaler so they could have very less expensive produce that they can now sell. Interestingly enough, when the federal government policy changed on using WIC vouchers to purchase fruits and vegetables, their sales went through the roof. They are now making money on fruit and vegetable sale in this store that never thought they would have. By the way, the kids here, these are four young kids from a middle school around the corner that actually chose the name Healthy in a Hurry Corner Store. So they were actively involved in the process. And this is the second one. Secretary Sebelius came as a result of our grant process, and we toured the second Healthy in a Hurry Corner Store with her. That's our congressman, the kind of short guy in the back there. And the mayor standing next to me. And this woman in the blue dress and blue top is actually the owner of the store. You'll see in this next couple of slides that the community was actively involved in this process as well. The gentleman here by the podium is the owner, but this is the second store that I talked about. The gentleman standing next to me is the CEO of the YMCA, the wife and the owner and the mayor again. And here is the Shawnee Neighborhood Association, who were actively involved in organizing to get this Healthy in a Hurry store organized and underway in this particular neighborhood. This is the councilwoman standing right in front of me. Last but not least, I have 3 minutes, I've been told. we are advocating that we all need to be a part of a new movement to bring about health equity and social justice. And that movement should be, and I'm not saying that the 60s methodology is the right way to go. This is what we did in the 60s. We organized around human rights, social justice, civil rights, and we had a national movement that involved everybody, faith community, educators, youth, old people, you know, Jews, Gentiles, black, white, everybody got on board of supporting this notion, and we got dramatic changes in the legislation in this country. I think we need to reactivate some type of social movement around health equity, social justice, and human rights as the foundation of the work that we do to bring about healthy kids. The last part of this presentation, those of you familiar with Photo Voice have seen this before. We work with young people to get their input. We talk with them about health and barriers to health, not telling them what it is, but getting their input and discussion. And we gave them cameras and sent them out in the street to take pictures and bring that back for us to present to the mayor and Metro Council as empowerment. And I have the photographs here with you. This one is the first one from Denzel. Denzel, you get Denzel? Yeah. Come on, y'all, Denzel. You all know Denzel. Anyway, Denzel's 10 years old. And he took this photograph. This is his neighborhood. So think about the things that we talk about in terms of built environment. Is this a place where you want to go exercise and walk and run? You know, the sidewalk is all busted up. There's garbage in the back. It just doesn't, there's an old tire here. And Denzel says, if my community were healthy, it would look like no people littering, people riding bikes, no people dealing drugs, but kids playing at the park, no gunshots. That's a good one. Parents and kids walking their dogs, no people smoking, parents taking their babies in a stroll to the park to walk them around the park. Denzel, age 10. Then there's DeCorian, the great wave of name changes in the African-American community. DeCorian, age 10. He says, my neighborhood has many train tracks and a really big factory that does something. I don't know what. There's a church, a community center, but look what he says. There's no store close to where I live. So he's got it figured out already. This is the saddest one of all. This is Michael. Every day I go to the community center on the side of it, they are selling drugs or showing off their guns, and sometimes I'm scared to walk past because I think they will shoot me. This is not a place where Michael's going to go and run around the track or where his mother's going to let Michael go outside because of the fear of what might happen to them. So this comes right back to my initial statement that addressing the issue of childhood obesity or any major health issue has to be done through the lens of health equity because it is so complex and complicated. And I think that is my last slide, and thank you very much for your attention. Oh, questions. So because I have to go to do another talk, if there are any questions or comments for me, I will take them at this point. Yes, way in the back. I didn't hear the last part.
As we, the segment of this country that voted last week,
Well, one of the interesting paradoxes of Louisville, Kentucky, is the home, the international home of Yum Brands, which is KFC, Taco Bell, the root beer company, and somebody else. You know, we have been fortunate in the fact that we've been driving this message home for the last 7 years with support of the mayor and the Metro Council, that we've been able to make significant change that to bring Yum to the table. We've actually sat down with these folk and talked about menu change, et cetera, or at least some way of addressing some of the issues that are, we feel are part of what they offer as meal menus. You know, we can't allow the far right and some of those who are extremists to dictate what we know about the health of populations. They're just flat out wrong. And we need to be very conscious about that, and we need to be very courageous in making sure we state that to our constituents that that's wrong. It doesn't make sense. You know, yes, we need regulations. Louisville, Kentucky, listen to us, and we have this one of the strongest non-smoking regulations in the country, in a tobacco state, in a tobacco city, where the Christmas celebration used to be called Light Up Louisville, because it was supported by you know, the tobacco industry. We are putting a menu labeling in place before the national legislation goes into place. So we've been fortunate enough to put this message out on an ongoing basis, and we have supported the new mayor, who just got elected, as a part of his campaign, said he's committed to supporting work around health equity. So I think it can be done, and even in a state like Kentucky.
Let me add, I think that in the spirit of this report, the place where we can affect change at the federal level, at the state level, and at the local level. And at the local level, there is the opportunity to engage in some conversations. Dallas right now, the Dallas Regional Chamber, not exactly an organization that anyone would characterize as a leftist progressive organization, it's made up of a number of Fortune 500 companies, has first of all said, educating our young people is something that we're going to make a priority, and they've come to realize that disparities and determinants of health are part of what drives the inequity in graduation rates. They now have come to realize that childhood obesity is one of the factors that will make that easier or less easy to move forward on, and have a group that wants to look at childhood obesity. So at the local level, there is the opportunity, I believe, to have those conversations, and in some communities more than others. I think the other point that came out of our local government actions committee is that it's just so different depending on the community. And what works in Louisville may not be what works in Dallas, may not be what works in Brooklyn or in New York for that matter. But those of you who are in those communities understand the cultures, the political cultures particularly, and can help affect change. And I guess the other endorsement is that in here are some things that a community can embrace that are strategies. There's some science behind them that make sense. You don't have to go inventing things. You can follow a recipe and follow those things that make sense for you at the community level.
I'll also share with you that other cities that got CPPW money did the same thing as we did. Seattle in particular, many others, they used that report and they took the data from that report and they wrote it into their grant application because it makes sense and it's based upon good logic and local response.
Can you pass this around?
Yes.
If I get it back, I won't be too angry, but everyone else will be, whoever took it.
There's a question in the back.
The graph that you showed for childhood obesity,
yes,
and the other factors were really, they're great visuals.
Yes.
Do you have a similar kind of graph showing current rate of obesity or overweight kids by those neighborhoods, and some sense like from an outcomes perspective of what we're trying to drive?
Yeah, we recognized early on that GIS maps are very dramatic ways of getting attention of policymakers and citizens and the community in general. So we have GIS maps on everything, from rates of chronic disease and acute disease to homicide rates to childhood obesity rates. The answer is yes, we do. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I've heard about that. That made national news. She just wanted to endorse, though. Just you wanted to brag is what you wanted to do. And you probably all heard the story about Southeast LA, where they made a decision, local councilwoman and community, that they had enough fast food restaurants, and they passed a moratorium on the development of any new fast food restaurants in Southeast LA. So yes, communities can do a great deal of positive work. We should probably make this the last question. Yes, ma'am. Last question. Yes. Oh, good.
And let's be clear, your statement is right. Sometimes it is about mobilizing community. This is a tool, and there's others out there that can help communities figure out what are some things around which they can influence whomever it is to take some action about this. Congratulations.
Okay, thank you very much.